Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires. This episode, we have a little bit of a special feature. This is looking back on the 25th anniversary of Michael Andretti's, we gotta call it, ill-fated season in Formula One as teammate to Ayrton Senna, the McLaren effort. 1993, absolutely peak of Formula One, technology explosion, active suspension, active everything, just a crazy, crazy year. Not McLaren's best year, having lost Honda, being forced to revert to customer Ford V8s instead of custom boutique V10s and V12s from the Japanese manufacturer. Nonetheless, we did see that Senna, especially in the rain at Donington and a few other places, worked his magic. Absolute miracles, as one would expect from one of the greatest drivers of all time. Andretti joined him as the best that IndyCar had to offer. This is Michael just truly at his dominant peak in this 1990, 91, 92 era. The guy that showed up in Formula One, by all accounts, not saying he was going to beat Senna, but this should have been an incredibly strong 1-2 punch. Someone who should have had many podiums, possibly a win in this rookie season of his. None of that panned out. If you know the story, some of the story, if you followed it back in 1993, you know that there are a lot of reasons given for why Michael did not succeed. Most of them were lobbed in his direction alone. He wasn't committed enough. He didn't live in Europe, etc., etc. At least listening to Michael's insights, as much as he was willing to give, we sat down in March of 2018, and then also with his father, Mario, which I've added as a second aspect to this interview. You might learn some new things. If you're definitely prejudiced against Michael and this 93 season and feel that he soured things for Americans for years to come, although it is just their side, I would say there might be some aspects to reconsider that might help you refocus some of the reasons as to why 1993 was definitely remembered as a colossal failure, even though he did end on a high note. His final race for the team at Monza, where he earned a podium, didn't complete the season. Mika Häkkinen was put in place and then went forward as a full-time driver in 1994. But I just found it interesting to sit down and see how much the Andretti's are willing to share, because they have been, by and large, fairly tight-lipped about the finer details, not wanting to get into a war with former McLaren boss Ron Dennis. We'll just say they have not received Christmas cards from Michael or Mario since this encounter in F1. We can also look at how Michael is now very close with McLaren and its new CEO, Zak Brown. So funny how things change. Nonetheless, looking back 25 years later at what went down and why America's best open-wheel driver was not able to succeed in Formula One, hope you might enjoy this little bit here. You know you can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast on iTunes, on Podbean, Google Play, also on Spotify, through a variety of content aggregators like Stitcher, and also on our Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page, which I would urge you to join. All right, off we go with Michael Andretti first, then his father Mario, on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires.
But it also just struck me numerically that we're kind of at that 25-year anniversary from when it happened. Has time and distance changed any reflections on it for you?
No, I mean, I just, you know, I understand, you know, why and what reasons why things happened, why people did what they did, and, you know, you just deal with it. You know, I think it was never a personal thing. It was just because of where I was in my career compared over here, and so I was just used in a different way, and it was, you know, but it, in the end, it almost ruined my career, and so it was a tough time, but a valuable time. Learned a lot, matured a lot that year, and you know, I don't hold any grudges. You know, maybe one, but he's gone anyway. So
I was gonna say it's so awesome. Yeah. You and McLaren.
I despise McLaren until the last couple of years. So I love it now. I love it. You go to that race team, it's like you're in a different team, just the way it's run. It's they're having fun what they're doing, which with Ron you weren't allowed to have fun.
You were coming out of a 92 IndyCar season. That Lola was gorgeous, fast like a rocket.
Don't even tell me.
You then move into F1 at, we look back historically at its peak for technology. So you go from this kind of analog brute to, holy crap, I need a PhD in science to grasp all this stuff. again, looking back with a little bit of time and context, how big of a transition was it to go from such different beasts?
That part was fun. You know, it was because you could get the car to do whatever you wanted. So I had a blast with that. But unfortunately, my car didn't always do what it was supposed to do. So that was a lot of times a problem. And everybody's like, I don't know why. Yeah, right. You don't know why. But anyway, it was, but that was fun. I mean, the debriefs were very long because you literally went corner to corner. From the moment you get on the brakes and, you know, okay, I want the back end to come down right when I touch the brakes. I don't want to start to put left front weight as you get into, I mean, you want to lower this. I mean, it was like
phenomenal.
You could do whatever you wanted. It was amazing, you know, and that part was fun as a driver, you know. So, and, you know, it was fun being in debriefs, me and Senna talking about it together. You know, what if we do this here? You know, it was good.
What do you recall of coming in and working with Senna, because you were coming in king of what we were doing here, man, right? I mean, there was no...
That was tough to leave, you know, that was a moment. There was a moment where, okay, it's time to sign, and I'm like, Dad, there's something, I don't know, man, I could stay here and rack up a record, because I'm like, next year we're going to win literally every race. I just knew it, you know, and because we're going to have the reliability and stuff. You're crazy if you don't do it. I'm like, all right. So then I did it, and it's the last time I ever listened to Dad. any advice like that. But, you know, it was, but yeah, it was a tough decision. You know, but it was cool experience. You know, I can say that I raced with Senna as my teammate, enjoyed it. We became friends. You know, he for one said that I was one of his best teammates, but nobody even knew it. And, you know, he even had a press conference after I got let go, how bad I'm treated, you know, that it was wrong the way I got treated. And, you know, that was cool that he did that for me. You know, he didn't need to, and he was so good, you know.
I was being compared to the
best
there.
You know, it was cool when I was quicker than him in certain corners and stuff, you know. And it was never on a race weekend because my car never did the same thing at a test, but at tests I'd always be right there with him, literally within the tent. But I go to a race and mysteriously I'm like 2 seconds off the pace, and it's like, you know. And, you know, I qualify at a race last, and then we go to test the day after the race, and I'm running pole speeds with Senna. It's like, okay. But anyway, it was a cool experience to be able to race with Senna, and I knew that I was being compared to one of the best ever, and there was times when I was right there on pace with him.
The fact that he respected you said a heck of a lot.
Yeah, exactly, you know, and it meant a lot that he did that.
One thing that, I don't know if you read it or listen to it, there are a lot of people who freely tell you if you had only done X different then, things would have been different. Do you buy into any of that? If you moved to Europe, et cetera?
You wouldn't have done anything. No, I wouldn't have done one thing, you know. It was like, people are clueless, you know. Me and being there, first of all, when I was there, they're like, okay, you guys need to leave, you know, when I was at the shop, you know, and I was like, okay, you know. And then, so, what was I going to do? Put on my thumbs? And I never got off the time zone. I'd be there with, thank God for the Concorde, because I could be there and door-to-door 6 hours. From my house to their house. So I was like, shit, take you that long from Monaco. So it was no problem there. I just laugh when I see people. They just are clueless. But they just loved using that. That's the excuses everybody uses. But nobody knows the truth of everything that's happened. And I can't put my finger and say for sure, but I know.
That's one of those, I'm going to write my autobiography, but it can't be published till after I'm gone, kind of.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Last question for you on this, Michael. So, 25 years. And again, I know that you obviously did not get everything you wanted out of that season. Wasn't as if there weren't some highlights and that you didn't show folks that, yeah, when things were going right, you not only belonged, but you were right up front. Is that any salve in whatever wound there might have been? Or?
You know, thank God at least I can say my last race I was on the podium. You know, that's cool. You know, so that was cool. But I could have been on a podium so many times that year with so many things happening, and like I said, it was an experience that for my career was probably not the best, but I think for me personally, I learned a lot, and I think I came out a lot more mature than I was when I went into it.
This was the most misunderstood situation you could ever have. Number one, the best way I can say it to begin with is that he went with the best possible team at the worst possible time. He went there and he was hired by Ron Dennis at McLaren because Ayrton Senna was leaving. But the deal was not complete. All of a sudden, Ron Dennis hired Mika Hakkinen from Lotus. At the time, he got him basically for nothing. And so since Ayrton's deal did not, mature with Williams at the time, Ayrton's staying, and you got two high-paid drivers there, and you got a third driver, a good one, that's there for free almost, doing nothing. So almost the minute the season started, Michael was in a very daunting position because he was the unwanted one, mm-hmm. No question about it. But the worst part about it is that you look back, only that season, there was a rule that was instituted that every single practice you could only have maximum of 23 laps you could run, and that's counting the in and out. And you could not test at the track where you're going to race. So every track that he went to was obviously the first time, and he could only do minimum amount of laps. And if you put all of that together, you look at, his performance, like South Africa, the first lap, he was only half a second off of Senna, who was the best of the best on the same team. And looking back, going back, okay, Michael made some mistakes for sure, which that didn't help him because, he was used to winning here and he was pushing the situation. He's not an idiot driver, but he was frustrated and he thought, that he had to make his mark right at the beginning. I mean, I've made those mistakes too, believe me. And unfortunately, all of this was kind of, making the situation even worse for him. But, to me, when you look back at the one performance, going back to Manicourt, the French Grand Prix, he came back, I think was from 18th to like 6th in the race. And not much overtaking going on. But the Monday and Tuesday, they both tested, Ayrton and Michael. And Michael and Ayrton were within the 10th. And Michael was a Series 7 and Cosworth, and Ayrton was a Series 8, the latest engine. But they were within 1/10. And they both would have been on the front row, if you look back historically. Yeah. So the point I'm making, nobody can tell me that Michael was not up for the job. And I tell you, and one guy that had the respect for him was Ayrton Senna. But again, if you look, I begged actually, he was not fired from them, but he from McLaren. To make it clear, Ron Dennis, the way I understand, told him that he could not renew his option until probably November. But he wanted to give Mika Hakkinen a couple of races before the end of the season. He said, so I'll have Mika in Italy. And I said, please, let him at least do Italy, just for me. And he did. In Italy, again, he started, I think, 16th and finished third, a good third. You know what I mean? You don't discard somebody like that and tell him, he didn't belong. Michael would have been world champion probably the following year. Because knowing all the tracks and everything else. So I'll argue that point with anyone that wants to talk about it, as far as Michael's ability to be in Formula One. And every test that they did up to that point, even with Mika, he was quicker than Mika, by the way. So, you know, he took they had to save their face, you know. And if Michael, here's the thing, if Michael would have been more patient and he would have probably had the passion for Formula One that I did, he would have probably said to Ron, and said, you know, Ron, I want to drive for you. I'll wait and see which way Ayrton goes. And Ayrton did go to Williams the following year. Michael would have been given the contract again. But Michael, you know, if you know what, you know, he felt that they didn't want him, so I'm out of here, and they said, I'm coming back to the States. So it was Michael's fault not to be, you know, to want to pursue that. I said, you know what, like when I went to Formula One, I figure I'm just going to give a few years of my career, you know, I got to give it full time, because I did it part time for a while. I said, I got to give it a good shot. And I was lucky, and that's if Michael would have had the same desire, you know, to really be in Formula One, I think it would have paid off for him. But he didn't, and so it is. It is what it is. But, you know, Michael could have been world champion, guarantee you that.
How do you feel about the relationship, the restoration of Michael's relationship with McLaren, obviously after... one person left who I don't think has ever been on the Andretti Christmas card list.
Well, like I said, it was a personality situation there, you know, unfortunately. But, you know, I think Ron probably had to do what he had to do at the time, because I think it was out of his hands, too, the fact that the Ayrton Senna's contract did not go through. You know, he, I think he was probably taken by, you know, taken back also by the fact that everything turned around on him. So I give him that much, you know. But it takes two to tangle, you know. And I think, again, there were some issues, you know, within the team. There were a couple of guys that I don't want to mention, but that were making things tough for Michael, you know. But at the same time, I think... it would have taken the real desire to say, you know what, I'm going to see this thing through in Formula One, for him to be maybe more patient. And he takes some of the blame for not kind of sticking it out. But he was looking at, you know, his own career. So what if all of a sudden, you know, Ayrton's contract didn't happen, then I'm out, you know, then I'm... So he went for a bird in hand, which was, you know, with a... the top team, you know, with Chip Ganassi, and in fact, you know, I think it helped Ganassi to really, you know, to just, I think Michael won the first race out for him. So,
yep.
But it is what it is, you know. But the only thing, as I said, that the story is not really known. People don't really know the true story. I do, in that. You know, the bottom line is, you know, Michael, I saw that even when the drivers were top drivers, 50 drivers that McLaren had, and they put Michael way in the back there, I said, you know what, you haven't got a clue what the hell, how you're assessing things. They don't. I'm sorry. You know, and a lot of people saying, a lot of the media was blaming, oh, well, you know, he's not living in Europe. Michael was almost closed on a house down, you know, south of France. He was going to move over there. I never wanted to move there. Mm. I did my thing. I did both ways. I said, nobody's going to tell me what to do as long as I'm doing my thing. You know, you don't tell me what I need to do, you know. And so, but they're blaming, oh, yeah, you know, he wasn't really concentrating. That's bull. That's total bull, you know. And so they're blaming a lot of things that are not true. But they don't know the facts either, you know. So it is what it is. But I know how the thing went through. And like I said, they rubbish him, and it's not fair.
And that was Michael and Mario Andretti on that ill-fated 1993 Formula One season. Definitely be interested to hear your thoughts after listening to the two of them. especially Michael with some deeper insights and Mario as well, as to, you know, a bit of the formula, a bit of the ingredients that went into why it was such a struggle. The feeling that there was an active effort within McLaren's management, specifically team boss Ron Dennis. If that sounds a little conspiratorial, I would say that Ron's name throughout the years has definitely been one where suggestions as such of favoritism or active efforts against those that he did not like. I know that I've read about those things, spoken by others involved with the team, so not the first time I've heard them. Not saying they're right or wrong, just saying not something I would just completely cast aside as an unheard of suggestion. So anyways, it would be interesting to get your thoughts about all they've offered about why things didn't go well, and if it matches up with whatever you may have seen or known when it took place. All right, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is the Marshall Pruitt Podcast presented by Cooper Tires. Thank you for listening.